The Craig Folly Show on Deadline Detroit is made possible in part by TechTown Detroit, Detroit's entrepreneurship hub. TechTown Detroit is a business incubator and accelerator, helping tech startups and local businesses launch and grow. TechTown supports businesses with co-working, office, meeting, and event space. They also connect entrepreneurs to resources and learning and networking events in Detroit. TechTown Detroit, Detroit's entrepreneurship hub. Greetings all. Happy Thursday. Welcome to the Craig Folly Show on Deadline Detroit. Coming up on today's program, a conversation with a guy who's just pretty interesting. Ran into Coleman Young II on the street the other day. We started talking, and I decided to invite him on the program to talk about things that are happening in our city. The man did serve several terms in the state legislature and, of course, ran a campaign for mayor here in the city of Detroit and a congressional campaign last year. Obviously did not win that race back in 2018, but anyway, he gave it a shot, so I figured, what the heck, why not have him on, see what he had to say about a lot of different things going on around the community, because there's always things going on around here. So that's coming up on The Craig Folly Show on Deadline Detroit. The Craig Folly Show on Deadline Detroit is made possible in part by Samaritas, the state's largest private foster care and adoption agency. However, Samaritas also provides a number of other services around the state. They are one of the largest refugee resettlement agencies in Michigan. They serve homeless families, persons with disabilities, abused and trafficked women. They also provide market rate and affordable housing for seniors and HUD housing for families, and also have skilled nursing, memory care, and rehab communities in Grand Rapids, Cadillac, and Saginaw. Samaritas, we thank them for their support here at Deadline Detroit. Hey, Craig here. Thanks for checking out the show on this Thursday. I really do appreciate it. Well, the other day, as I said in the intro, I was walking down the street and I ran into Coleman Young II, of course, the former state legislator. He served 3 terms in the House, 2 terms in the Senate, of course, being another victim of term limits. He then sought other offices, ran for mayor unsuccessfully in 2014, and of course, also tried to run for the seat that is now occupied by Rashida Tlaib in Michigan's 13th Congressional District. He didn't win that one either. He's now got a consulting company that's out there, though, and I ran into him on the street, and we just started talking, and I said, hey, well, why don't you come on the show one of these days? Tell me what you're up to and get your perspective on things that are happening around the city. And he said, yes, and he joins me right now. Coleman Young II, welcome to the Craig Folly Show on Deadline Detroit. Glad to have you with me.
Always good to be here. Thank you so much, sir.
Absolutely. Well, I'll tell you what, you know, it's an interesting time. And I want to start with this just because I've been watching these congressional hearings all for the last couple of weeks, obviously. They're going on again today. And it just always reminds me of your late father's appearance in front of the House Un-American Activities Committee. You know, you're watching this sort of stuff. I just want to get a sense from you. You know, when you have a guy that basically tells them to kiss his rear end.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to be anybody's stool pigeon.
I mean, right.
Just, how does that make you feel when you think back on that?
Well,
kind of
look,
stuff?
When
we weren't there to see it, obviously, but it's got to make you proud.
Well, listen, when I hear about that, when I see that, I just think that it gives me a sense of pride. It gives me a sense of confidence coming from that, you know, coming from that lineage, coming from that, you know, legacy and heritage. I think. It's kind of how we want our leaders to be. I mean, it was just, it's like they broke the mold when they made my father. It turns out that type of man who just said it like he thought, who just spoke the truth. But you knew that that he cared. It came from a place of compassion. It came from a place of love. You know, he wasn't going to take any wooden nickels, and he wasn't going to take your mess. But if you were on the up and up and you wanted to do the right thing and do what's best in Detroit, my father got behind you 110%.
Well, and obviously we won't spend a lot of time talking about your dad because you've
right.
had your own career.
Sure.
And, you know, basically you timed out of the legislature.
Yeah.
Which, you know, there's some discussion out there right now about revising term limits here in Michigan.
We should.
As somebody who wasn't allowed to run anymore. You were serving your constituents. They probably would have put you back in office a couple more times had you been allowed to run. What do you think is a viable alternative to the current system that we have right
well,
now?
Well, look, I don't believe in term limits personally. I think that all it does is empowers the big lobby firms and empowers staff to be able to run because you have no institutional memory. So it empowers them to be able to run Lansing or to run the Capitol. But I think that what I want is abolishing term limits altogether. I don't think that's really workable or doable or believable. But I think that if they extended it to a couple years, you know, maybe to, you know, I'm thinking like maybe a 10 maybe 18 type of thing. I know that's a lot, but I think that would be a better, so you could really have an opportunity to get skills, to do what you need to do, and really just kind of do what's best for the state.
Well, if you're limited for 8 in the Senate and 6 in the House, if I'm not mistaken, it's 3 terms in the House,
right.
2 terms in the Senate, why not just have it so that's the maximum number of years you could do? That's, what, 14 years. Why not just do something like that?
Well, I mean, I think that's and I think
you
that's,
could serve it in one house. Yeah, or the
other. I think that's a good thing. I mean, you probably should talk to the people who are doing this. I feel that's logical. You know, have a maximum term of years that you can serve in both places. I think that's a good thing. I just think they need to be extended. I personally think that we should probably have, I would say at least 3 more terms in the House. I would say at least 3 more terms in the Senate. I just think it should be extended longer than it is currently. I just don't think guys have learned enough about the job. They don't understand enough about the job. And this is one of those type of jobs where you learn while doing it. There's no other job that will really prepare you for public service in the legislature or in the executive branch. You really have to learn by doing it.
Well, and I'm wondering if you find that that sort of level of inexperience, and you talked about the lack of institutional memory. I used to cover the legislature back when term limits were not yet in effect.
Right.
And I saw these guys able to compromise, make complex deals on things like the budget.
Right.
And we're still sort of at a stalemate in Lansing on this issue right now. How does... Is this just a manifestation of that problem, that lack of institutional knowledge?
I think it's
knowledge?
Part of it. I think the institutional knowledge of just being able to trust the other person on the other side, having that relationship is part of it. I think another part of it, though, is gerrymandering. I think that's why I'm so glad that the proposal passed where you basically are now having people who are where you're having an independent commission draw up those maps. I think that's something that's important because before you had politicians picking their voters instead of voters picking their politicians. As somebody who actually went through that process, I could tell you that was one of the more disgusting parts of my career.
Really?
I was very and that's saying a lot going through what I went through up there. That's saying a lot. You know, I had guys wanting to fight me up there. So physically. So going through that was probably one of the more disgusting parts of my career. I'm glad we cleaned that up. It's needed to happen. I think that's part of it. I also just think, though, that part of the reason why we're so polarized in America today is also, I think, the way in which our, and I'm not, and this is not a diss on media, but I think it's just the way social media has changed and the way it's influenced news coverage as a whole, where now you're having people who are more focused on just turning out a certain demographic than actually talking about the news as a whole. You know, the days of Walter Cronkite in terms of how he would try to talk to everybody and that shared experience of everybody sitting in front of television and watching news, that's over. I mean, everything is segmented now. Everything is just going towards a different demographic or a certain demographic now. And so I think it's just, and social media has really kind of done that as well. You know, I mean, I'm not dissing people. Well, I don't want to use that term, but you know, in terms of people saying, well, look, I called this guy out of his mess. I went on social media and did this. And now that's kind of spilling over into our public discourse. And so I think it's how we deal with that. That's really doing all of it.
Well, one of the
and that
things,
influences our public discourse overall.
Oh, absolutely. Well, it seems one of the things that's happened as a result of gerrymandered districts as well is that there's a limited number of spots for minority lawmakers, period.
Yeah.
Now, granted, the map is changing a little bit, especially in Oakland County. That's giving minority candidates a much more of an opportunity than they perhaps had in recent years. But when you're a consultant, you're trying to help somebody navigate these waters and decide
right.
whether or not they want to run. How often are you in a position where you just got to say, hey, look, there's just not a slot for you that's realistic at this point in time?
Well, I mean, that's always going to come up. You're always going to have things where it's like, you know, it's different now because I think that the electorate has changed now. I think people are much more open, you know, on the issues and much more inclusive on the issues of people based on their ideas, whereas before, maybe the issues of race or maybe the issues of ethnicity, you know what I'm saying? People would be a little bit more closed-minded. I think we're definitely more open now in this, you know, time or in this generation at least. I think it's just finding the right person with the right message in the right place. And I think that politics overall has changed, too. I think that when you're talking about, especially the Democratic Party, when you're talking about the rise of Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and, you know, the squad, you know, I think that politics is now starting to become, is we go more progressive? Are we more moderate? You know what I mean? And so I think it's that generational divide as well. And so I think it's how you bridge that and how you're going to come about talking about that as well. I think those are things that are really, if I'm talking to somebody, if I'm advising them, if they want to get into a campaign, these are things that I'm talking about, as well as geographically. Do they have a space to be able to go in there or not? Now, there might be some places where it's like, this person, you know, may or may not be, this may not be the best place for you because of demographics, because of the area, because their politics and what they believe. But, you know, there's other places, other opportunities as well. And I think that with this, though, when you're talking about the issues of gerrymandering, I think that with the independent redistricting commission, I think less of that is going to happen, because you're going to have more districts that are going to be more moderate, that are going to be more based on who can represent the most voters or the broader voters. Where before it was just like, what can I do to win? I mean, that's basically what you were doing. Like, how can I make sure that I'm going to keep my seat and stay in my job?
Yeah.
That's what it was before. And, you know, I understand that from a political standpoint. That's your main goal, obviously, is to stay there to continue to serve. But if you're doing it at the expense of democracy or at the expense of the voters, that's got to change.
I should remind folks, my guest right now, Coleman Young II, of course, he's got a political consulting company that he's got going right now.
And
he's
cannabis as well.
I'm sorry?
And a cannabis consulting company
well, there
as well.
You go. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And you've got a ton of political experience. Of course, served in the state house, the state senate as well. You ran for mayor here in the city of Detroit. You mentioned the squad. You ran in the 13th congressional district. And as I mentioned, sort of, there were a lot of candidates in that race because there are only a couple of slots that are viable for Detroit-based lawmakers. There's the two districts. You've got 14 and 13, basically, mm-hmm. which are viable paths for minority candidates. That was a crowded field.
Yeah.
Do you envision, with these changes with independent redistricting, do you get a sense that there is going to be more space? That it's not just like, okay, we've got two races that we might be able to win, and therefore you've got so many people jammed into these two districts as opposed to maybe trying in the 12th or maybe trying in 11. Is there a possibility that we might actually have more viable options for candidates?
Well,
I don't want to say that a black candidate can't win in a traditionally white district. I think that those things are changing.
Oh, no, I think they can.
That's not what I'm implying.
No, that's not how I took it either.
I mean, it was drawn to be like, okay, right. Here's the two black representatives from Detroit.
Well, you got to understand this, too. When we were drawing the redistricting maps up there when I was serving, basically what, you know, the Republican at that time was telling me was, you could do whatever you want in Wayne County. Just don't draw it in Macomb and don't draw it in Oakland. That's basically what he told me. You can do whatever you want. So I understand exactly where you're coming from. I do think that in Detroit, I mean, I want to say there's going to be more opportunity, but because of the population decline, even though it's lesser than it was before, I think during the slowdown.
Yeah.
I think during the redistricting process, I want to say there's going to be two districts. I hope that positively. I want to believe that. My optimistic self wants to, but I don't know for certain. Hopefully we'll keep those. Maybe, but it could possibly shrink down to one. So I don't know I don't think the opportunities are going to, I think it might be a little more scarce once that process is happening. But could African Americans win in other places? I mean, we do have an African American who won, I mean, this is in Wayne County, but I said we do have an African American who won East Point.
Yep.
First black female over there at East Point. You do have candidates who, a female candidate.
Livonia.
First female candidate, Livonia, just going to say. So there is more opportunities for that, depending on what their message is and how their message goes. I just want to say also, I want to take a chance just to the first African-American dean, John Conyers, may he rest in peace. That was his seat that we were all running for at that time. So it added that much more importance to it. But I also think that, just to say this too, I think that Rashida Tlaib's, in terms of her seat, I think that's going to be real interesting to see how that's going to happen. We'll have to wait and see what's going to happen right now and how that plays out. But I think that's going to be real interesting to see. What a race to watch.
Well, you know, I watched her for a long time, obviously, when she was in the legislature as well. I've seen her work that neighborhood for a long time, and she's out there.
She's a tireless worker.
She absolutely is.
You got to tip your hat to her. She's a tireless worker.
And there were a lot of people that were wondering how she was going to represent the district. Was she going to have the needs of the people? Obviously, there's a lot of notoriety for her because she's a member of the squad.
She's so outspoken.
I mean,
when she went out there, like I think like her first day and said what she said about Donald Trump, you know, back then people were getting ready to get pitchforks.
But is that resonating? Resonating with the district,
like,
though?
Almost a year later. Yeah. They actually added Petra Heary. So before she was, you know, being a heretic, now she might be considered a prophet. You know what I mean? So I think it's amazing how that changes over that time. You know, regardless of what you think about it. I mean, everybody has their negatives and their positives. But I definitely think that with her, I think that it's just going to be real interesting to see who wants to get in, how they're going to be, if anybody does decide to get in, if they not. You know what happens, difference between what you hear and what is real. But I definitely think that's going to be real interesting. You know, there's a lot of things that people can run against, but there's a lot of things she's done, too, that people are going to like as well. And so I think it's just interesting to see how all that's going to play out.
You know, it's always about, you know, whether or not what you're doing is translating back to the neighborhoods,
right,
and whether people are feeling good about what you're doing for them.
Right.
And obviously, when you're in the legislature, it's harder to point to a simple success like a mayor position can, saying, "Hey, I repaved your street," or "I tore that house down next to you." In the legislature, it's like, "Well, I passed a budget. I worked on this."
Right.
Bill. It's much harder to translate that to people seeing direct results as a result of your work.
Right.
How did you convince people in your district when you were in office that, hey, look, it might not be something you notice right away, but here are the things that are actually going to positively impact your situation? Because it's not always easy to explain.
Well, what I used to do is I used to talk about constituency concerns. I mean, we had a real good grassroots constituency effort and concerns in terms of, you know, solving certain problems. You know, if they call you, you would call the city. You would advocate. You would be their advocate on their behalf in terms of constituency concerns. Maybe in terms of people who, you know, had their water shut off, you would help. You would call the city to help them get their water turned back on. You know, I had my chief of staff, Jewel Gillespie, you know, God bless her, I love her, you know, and miss her dearly. She actually helped some folks get out of jail. So, I mean, I think that was one of the ways in which I really reached out to people, with telling them what we've done on a local grassroots level in terms of helping them with their daily issues. And we also talked about what bills I was passing as well. I mean, when I first got up there, I passed a historic civil rights bill about it was involving pregnant police officers who would cover their pregnancy, who would hide their pregnancies, because if they didn't, they had to take unpaid mandatory leave. And so I passed laws balancing that throughout the workplace within Michigan and dealing with that issue in terms of equality. If you're going to take paid leave from a pregnant woman, you have to take paid leave from a guy who stubs his toe as well. And so I think that was something I thought that was historic that I passed. And I was fortunate enough and blessed enough to pass in my first term. So overall, I appropriated, I think, over $800 million to the great state of Michigan, including the city of Detroit. So, and I passed 13 laws. So I had a lot of things I could talk about in terms of laws and bills that I passed and budgets as well. But I also think investment in terms of the appropriations process of where I've appropriated money, that's something that's also very important. I think I did that as well.
You know, obviously, you've got guts. You've run for a lot of different positions. And
yeah,
anybody that's got the guts to actually run for office, in my opinion, is deserving of respect, because most of us talk a good game but are too big a wusses to actually try.
Right.
Mayor, toughest job in the world in any city. I don't care what city you're in. If you're in a small town or you're in a big city, people expect results.
Right.
And I'm looking at Mayor Duggan, and obviously, full disclosure, obviously spent a lot of time working in this administration.
Sure.
But you look at the problems that Detroit has. We're having a big debate right now about blight. There are a number of people suggesting that the root causes of blight are not being adequately addressed. There are others are saying that, right, the demolition is not happening fast enough. That bond issue did not go through. And I'm wondering, from your perspective, what do you think that the Duggan administration might have misread from the public on this issue, and why council did not back him up on this
issue? Well, first of all, let me just say that I respect the will of the voters. He ran a hell of a race. You know, I ran it, full disclosure as well. I ran against the man.
Yes,
was successful. But hats off to him. I think that when you look at it in terms of what they've done in terms of knocking down the houses, I think in terms of demolishing the houses, I think that that was a really good thing. Now, we still have 19,000 houses I think need to be demolished.
Yeah, they still need the money to do it.
Yeah, they need to be demolished. I think that the land bank owns the most property out of any land bank in the country.
Yeah, by far.
From my
understanding,
I think
it's about 90,000 parcels.
Yeah, 90,000. Yeah, correct me if I'm wrong. So that's a yeoman's task. I think the issue, though, that I'm hearing from people in the community is, what are we doing about keeping people in their houses and using the hardest hit funds, which now has ran out? So I think you probably have to go to the federal government to convince them for more money about keeping people in their houses, keeping people in their homes, about building more affordable housing for people who need it. And I know that they have a plan that they're doing. And as someone who lost the election, I believe that as a man with a certain ethical moral code, it's not my responsibility or job to Monday morning quarterback,
sure,
what he's doing. So I don't want to say that. But I do think that the issue that we're dealing with right now is just, what's the best way to provide housing for people who are in the city? What's the best way to provide opportunities involving jobs that they create for building those houses? And I think once he kind of finds that sort of sweet spot in terms of how to spend the money, whether it be on demolition or whether it be on building houses, kind of find that middle ground with council, I think he'll get the votes he needs.
Coleman Young II, my guest right now on the program. Wide-ranging conversation. We're all over the place.
Yeah.
One of the big debates that we're having in Detroit right now, too, is over this issue of obviously, the perceived gentrification here in the city of Detroit. And I say that because it's not like San Francisco, and it's not like Chicago at this point. But we're starting to see that. And there are lots of discussions about inclusion and whether or not everybody's going to equally participate in some of the changes that are happening here in the city of Detroit. From your perspective and what you see, what are some steps that we should be taking that are going to solve some of these concerns, some of them legit, some of them maybe a little bit paranoid, but these concerns that, again, somebody's going to be left behind?
Well, listen, I think that the issues that we're dealing with right now in terms of gentrification, you're right. I think the issue with the city of Detroit right now is the fact that, and this has happened before Mayor Dutton got here, I think it's the major issue in terms of just foreclosures in general and people losing their houses in general. I think it's also the financial crisis that hit. I think 62% of mortgages in Detroit were subprime.
You know,
compared to like 27 or 28 nationally. So I think it extracted like $500 million out of the city, somewhere within that mark. So when you have that happen, you know, when you have nationally African-Americans, the city of Detroit, primarily African-American, lose 53% of their wealth, you're going to have a crisis of people losing their properties and leaving their houses. And I think those are some of the major reasons why Detroit, there are more people who rent homes. I think it's like
53% to 47%.
Yeah, I think that's the highest it's been since World War II, if I'm not mistaken. So I think it's more of the national pressures along with some of the things we've been struggling with locally because of poverty. I think it's gone down. I think at one point it was like 35-37%. Now I think it's like 32, somewhere within that mark. So it's trending in the right direction. But I think that those are some of the issues that they're going to have to deal with, and you're going to have to deal with in terms of, like I said, again, affordable housing, building it for people who can actually afford it, and make sure that's within the average median income. So that's $27,000, because average median income in Detroit is done with the region.
Yeah.
And that's more $40,000. Well, the average median income for Detroit is like $27,000, I think like $838,000, somewhere in that number. Yeah, somewhere in there. So you got to make sure that you narrowly tailor it for Detroiters. I think in terms of housing, that's critical. You also got to make sure that when you're creating these jobs, that we have strong enough community benefits programs or partnerships with job training facilities so that Detroiters could qualify for these jobs, they could get these jobs and rise themselves out of poverty, you know, as well as reaching out again to the, now it's going to be a stretch, it's going to be hard work with Donald Trump and those guys up in there right now, but I think reaching out with them, I think there's programs that are available that can help people in terms of finances and grants and things of that nature that you're going to need to do in a city in order to make sure that you have opportunities. And also here too, and I'm sure they're already doing this. I'm sure I'm not telling the city anything they're not already doing. This is not critical. This is just my thoughts on what to do. But I think that there's something called Section 3 within HUD that says that any house that is built has to, with federal funds, has to include the city, the members that live within the city. I think that's something that you're going to have to deal with. I think that what he's doing with Chase Bank in terms of getting the analytics of the city right now, and I think in terms of the people of color, in terms of the business entrepreneur, in terms of loans, and starting up their own businesses, I think more business incubators are going to have to be necessary. And I think working with the financial institutions locally to be able to loosen the restrictions in terms of access to capital so they can be able to build the businesses that they need to build. I think that's something that's critical. And I think they're doing something in terms of investing in neighborhoods with a targeted fashion. I think that's good. I think you're just going to have to make sure that you invest more at some point in time in some of the harder hit areas. And I'm sure they're doing that already.
Well, you know, from a cultural standpoint, though, too, there's a concern that
transit is something that's very critical that we're going to have to have mass transit, especially. And it'd be coordinated. So it'd also be linked with the scooters. It'd be linked with Uber. It'd be linked with, you know, or Lyft, GM, excuse me, Lyft. It'd be linked. Gotta get them in.
That's right.
But it'd be coordinated. So it'd be intermodal transit. It'd be rapid bus, you know, it'd be rapid rail. It'd be a lot of things that'd be intermodal with each other. I think that'd be the best way to go. And I'll just say this and I'll be done. Education, I think, is critical too. When you're talking about a school system that has over $600 million in terms of in terms of financial needs they need for upkeep,
yeah,
for the assets.
And no way to raise the
money. And no way to pay for it. I mean, you're not going to succeed with that. And when, you know, Nikolai Vidi is saying a lot of that came from emergency management and how the state handled that. The state has responsibility. And I think, and I know that's a lot to, a lot of, that's a large plate to levy onto Governor Whitmer. But something is going to have to be done where you're actually going to have to appropriate some kind of direct capital for Detroit to be able to function. Because without a school system, you're not going to be able, you're not going to thrive. You're not going to function as a school. Now, they already did something about auto insurance. And we can go on like down the time. They already did something about auto insurance. We have to see how, there were some things in there I liked in there,
yeah,
the proposal. There's some things kind of, you know, makes me a little bit hesitant. But I think the Michigan Cash Rock Claims Association, I think they reduced by $100 the fee. So that's, yeah, that's good. That's right. That's the right direction. I think they have to mandatory lower those rates for 5 years. So we'll have to wait and see.
And the market's going to change a lot on that, too.
Yeah.
As some of the liability issues change, there'll be more companies that come into the market. We
should see.
But I don't know how that's going to shake out either. But let's end on this one, because this is a debate we're having, too. From a cultural perspective, we've seen a lot of changes. Obviously, there's a lot of development happening in downtown Detroit. Mm-hmm. We're starting to see some of that stuff percolate out in some of the neighbors, if you look at some of the efforts in, like, Live 6 area, things like that. But there are a number of people in the community that say, hey, it's great that we're seeing development in the city, but it doesn't seem like any of this stuff is geared towards me.
Right.
You know, okay, that's great that you have a nice, fancy restaurant down there, but I can't go to that restaurant,
right,
or I'm not welcome there. What can we do to sort of bridge this cultural gap that seems to be is being exposed a little bit right now?
Well, like I said, again, I mean, I think that it just comes down to your target investment and where
you're investing in terms of businesses, in terms of making your places welcoming for everybody, making people feel welcome. I mean, you look at the stuff that happened with that brewery over there, the way that they handled that and all. I mean, these sorts of issues are starting to percolate more. They had the big discussion over at the Checker Bar not too long ago about between the business owners and the customers. And a lot of people saying, look, it doesn't seem like you're catering to me. It doesn't seem like you want me in your business. And that's something we're going to have to solve here if we're going to succeed in Detroit, obviously, and redevelop. What are some things we can do to sort of, I guess, initiate some sort of understanding? I don't want to say healing, but understanding.
Well, I would say, and I think that the city is already doing this, but I would just say, you know, we really probably have to use your bully pulpit and just talk about these. And I've seen, you know, I see people do this already. But I think just really talk about this issue. You know, go out of your way to talk about how we are stronger together. Talk about, you know, what we have. We have more in common than we have more in common with what unites us than what divides us. I also think that we have to start, you know, talking to people about acknowledging people's humanity. And that we also want to make sure that just because that we don't want unity at the expense of someone else's humanity. And what I mean by that is we want to come together. We want to work as one. We want to be as one. We want to also acknowledge people's differences, acknowledge people's struggles, acknowledge that there are certain people who are coming from different backgrounds, racially, ethnically, that don't have the same experiences with America that we do, historically or in the now. And so we need to acknowledge that. We need to be sensitive to that. We need more caring of that. And, you know, this is something that's not used a whole lot in politics, but I think we need to show more love and compassion towards one another as well. And I think that's and I think that we should have we should partner up with nonprofits. I'm sure they're doing this already. A partner with nonprofits and partner up with our ecumenical community as well and talk about this and have these type of discussions, have these type of reach. I'm sure they're doing this with house parties that they're having. I'm sure they're married, like two a week or something like that. I think or something like that. So, you know, but I think just getting that message out as well. And I think that's something that's very important.
Well, last question for you, and just sort of a broad, wide-open one. What do people who are listening right now need to know about you today?
Well, what they need to know about me today is I have a cannabis consulting company as well as a political consulting company. You can go to ColemanYoungConsulting.com to get all that information. We'd love to help you, as well as real estate as well. We do a lot of things. I'm having a podcast coming out real soon, so please stay tuned. And I'm also starting up a foundation for out of school time for children in high school between 14 and 18 to focus on STEM, so science, technology, engineering, and math. So please look forward and support all that.
Excellent. Well, we appreciate your time, sir. It was fun.
Always
we'll
a pleasure.
Have you back.
And, hey, man, I feel like I've arrived. I'm on Deadline Detroit, man, with Craig Fry. This is getting better than this. This is getting better than this.
Well, it does, but that's okay. All right, we appreciate your time, sir. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
And that's going to wrap it up for today. Thanks, everybody, for checking it out. I do appreciate you tuning in, and I also appreciate your feedback. Send me an email, thecraigfolleyshow@gmail.com. I always appreciate that. You can also find me on LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Snapchat, all those places. Feel free to drop me a line there or get your ideas across if you want to give me some suggestions for the show or tell me to shut up, whatever you want to do. I'm okay with that stuff. So get in touch with me that way. Quick reminder, coming up on Friday, it'll be the week that was. One thing, I'm not going to be able to do the Facebook live stream on Friday. I've got some competing interests that are happening on that day. So the week that was will be available on video at deadlinedetroit.com a little bit later on that day, and of course available as a podcast. So just want to make sure that you are aware of that. So for those of you that are sitting around watching me on Fridays do the week that was live, it's not going to happen this week, but should return the following week, which will be great. Anyway, have a good day. It's already Thursday. Think about that for just a second. Have a great one. We'll talk tomorrow. The Craig Folley Show on Deadline Detroit is made possible in part by Mad Dog Professional Services. Mad Dog Professional Services focuses on putting their clients on the leading edge of technology, faster than thought possible, to capture new revenue streams. That's Mad Dog Professional Services.